Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
The Word is a proud media partner of Latitude Festival 2012. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.latitudefestival.co.uk.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Yes, on an espresso. The size of my bladder. Christ, I'll never get back on the tube after one of those. That's right. I'll be busting my Baron's cool. Oh, it's awful. Oh, God.
So anyway, Ray, curious experience this week, which was to listen to The Word podcast while not having taken any part in it. So I'm walking down the road and I'm listening to Mark, talking to Mark Billingham, the crime writer, about... it's before you got to talking about books. I had stood stock still in the middle of the street. Cross!
Well done.
No, you didn't do anything wrong at all, but I felt myself suddenly... I was walking in the shoes of a podcast listener because you were offering what I consider the controversial opinion. Which was the Beatles' Devil in Her Heart.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, God.
Was not a good record.
No, but that wasn't an opinion.
Sorry.
It was a fact.
Sometimes you misunderstand this. It's a well-known fact that there are 5 bad Beatles songs. And that's one of them.
All right, first point, not a Beatles song.
Okay, well, I said it wasn't a Beatles song. Okay. I think. It was recorded by
it was an R&B hit by the Donnays or something that they just liked.
It's quite a good song, but ruined by the Beatles.
Oh, now he's shifting his ground, listeners. If I'd known this, I would have stood still longer in the street.
They made a dog's dinner of it.
No, it's just really...
with Mr. Moonlight, which I didn't write out, didn't
it? It's just really funny how this kind of bolt of indignation goes through you while you're listening to somebody talking about, uncelebrated Beatles songs. But did this also lead to, or was it just parallel with, the thread on the Word website about... great Beatles records and bad Beatles
records.
Those
threads followed the podcast.
They followed the podcast.
Did they?
Okay, right. So, I have no quarrels with the good Beatles songs. You know, you can compile your own.
There's 3 or 4 of them, actually.
It's very easy to do.
There's 5.
Well, I found myself falling out with the idea of the bad ones. Because the things that people nominate as the bad ones are always... Well, go on, guess what they are, Mark. You might not have looked at the thread.
I haven't looked at the thread, so obviously my 5 will be in there, which is Maxwell, obviously. Love Me Do, which is absolutely...
No, I know you're going to be... Okay, but you're going to be controversial. Fraser, tell me what they are. More.
Well, I love Maxwell Silverhammer, so I'm not the right person to ask.
I like Maxwell Silverhammer. I haven't got nothing against it at all. I like it, you know. If you
Michelle. Yeah, if I raise you, Michelle.
Michelle, I don't like
it. I love Michelle. I hate Obladi.
Okay.
You're the same cab as Maxwell, aren't you? It's the old umpire music.
Oh, I like women. I don't like the explainer.
I'm going to go on to Joanna.
But you see, my point is, you know, it's like Revolution Number 9. You know, we all think, nobody in the world leaves it on when they're playing the White Album or anything like that, do they? You know, particularly it's what the CD remote control was invented for, wasn't it? Revolution Number 9.
But you like the idea of it, don't you?
Well, absolutely.
Like Ulysses. Nobody reads Ulysses. It's the same thing, aren't they?
Okay. Because I was very persuaded by Paul McCartney's point when he was being interviewed for the anthology films some years ago, where he said, some people say the Beatles' White Album would be better as a single disc, you know. And he says, I say, get over it. It's the Beatles' White Album. And I thought, that's a really sound piece of reasoning. Yeah. Because the charm of that record is its excesses.
Yeah.
Is its mad, you know, ambition, which is the reach is greater than the grasp all the way through the record.
And some of the best bits on it are by individuals when the others are out of the country or not in the studio.
Yeah.
Just saying, I'm going to put this down.
So it's this kind of... It's all that crazed untidiness, all that, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do Revolution Number 9 just to upset Paul, I'm going to do honey pie just to upset John, which is all part of the Beatles story, isn't it? You know, it's that stuff off at the edges of what they are is as much them as Strawberry Fields Forever or I Want to Hold Your Hand.
But how does this legitimise Mr. Moonlight, though, Dave? I see your point and I accept it, but there are some that are, you know, crimes against humanity and unforgivable, aren't they? But very few.
I'm saying if Mr. Moonlight is the worst thing a band have done in their career, they've got off pretty lightly, I would say. You know, that's not much of a skeleton in the closet, is it, really, to be fair?
No, it's not, but it's just the idea of trying to find fault with the Fabs is entertaining itself, because you know how fundamentally wrong it is. And how thin the ice is upon which you stand.
Yeah. And it's like, if you tidied up the Fabs, then you don't make them any better, do you? You know what I mean?
You need the odd Mr. Moonlight as ballast against which to match the great masterpieces. You know, maybe you need that.
You'd make them less interesting if you got rid of those songs.
Yeah, you would.
You do. You do. You don't make anybody any happier by getting rid of that stuff at all. So anyway, on Tuesday night, after the Word in Your Ear gig with Scritti Politti and the Portico Quartet, I left the gig determined on one thing, and I've got a new policy as far as buying vinyl is concerned. I've decided I want to buy loads of vinyl. If I had my way, I'd just buy tons of it, absolutely all the time. But it's really expensive. You know, it's sort of £20 or whatever. So my new policy is going to be I will buy new vinyl of acts that I've seen or met, right? So a little bit of a souvenir of the encounter, yeah? Because I realised I missed a chance to do this with Emily Barker and the Red Calais Halo at the previous Word in Your Ear, because they were selling vinyl. I should have bought that, and I just didn't think to do it. So anyway, as I'm leaving the gig, I'm thinking, great, they'll have a little table set up near the door, and I can buy the vinyl. Of course they weren't. For some reason, they didn't. And I went home.
Did they have CDs?
They didn't appear to have anything at all.
Scritti Politti, you're talking about?
Yes.
Do they still put stuff out in vinyl? I mean,
we'll explain this in a moment. So I go home thinking, well, I'm going to have a look on the Rough Trade site or the Rough Trade shop, see if I can buy the vinyl of this record. I'm prepared to give you £20 for this record, yes? You know, people complain about, you know, how difficult times are in the record business. I'm going to give you £20. And I said, I couldn't find the record at all. And so I eventually thought, well, I want it. This is his last record.
The image of you running into a record shop, sort of waving a great fistful of notes, like people waiting in a bar to be served. You know?
And this last record called, White Bread, Black Beer, which came out a few years ago, which he played a few songs from when he did the podcast. And it's a wonderful record. I've heard it on Spotify. God, it's a good record. But I can't buy it, so I have to buy the next best thing, which is the CD, right? So I order the CD from Amazon, okay? And I come in the following morning, and I say to Fraser, I've tried to buy the record. Fraser, you had done the same thing, hadn't you?
I'd done exactly the same thing. I'd gone home and I'd looked at the Rough Trade shop, Rough Trade website, the label website, and they no longer sell the vinyl. So I'd gone on to discogs.com, which is usually the place for buying cheap, a reasonably priced stuff that's no longer in print, and they had no copies. And I went to eBay and I found one for £12.99.
So you bought, for £12.99, a second-hand, yes, pre-loved copy.
The tracks that you particularly like, Fraser, they may have an enormous cigarette burn in them.
Well, he's brilliant.
That's the risk you're taking.
But here's the point. Yeah. Here's the point. How much did you pay, Fraser, for the second-hand version of the vinyl?
£12.99.
How much did I pay for the CD delivered to my door the following day?
I'd say a third of that price.
£2.50. £2.50. And you think, the record business is mad.
And it hasn't got any jam on track.
Here am I, you know, standing out in the street going, £20.
Somebody called Derek hasn't written all over the sleeve.
To anybody who can bring me a copy of, you know, a vinyl copy of this record. And I end up getting this thing for £2.50. It sort of makes no sense at all, does it, really? Because out of the £2.50... how much is Green getting from that? I mean,
he'd be so thrilled to think he went back and tried to buy a...
And he's not getting anything.
Electrified by his life.
No. It's madness. But anyway, that's going to be my policy in the future. I'm going to buy vinyl by acts I've seen or met. Do you think that makes
sense? Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, it certainly limits expenditure, which is the important thing. There's a little vinyl market that comes to the Roman Catholic Church Hall around the corner from where I live once a month. I just can't help, you know that, I can't help going in there. and it's awful. And I go in and I look in the same boxes at the same records that were probably there last month.
Looking at stuff you already own.
Looking at stuff I already own. Remember Giles Smith said that brilliantly about how he always went into record shops to see if, you know, if his favourite crew's ever made any records that he never actually bought. It's just a surprise release.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I finished up last time. I bought a bootleg of Metal by the Pink Floyd. I mean, I don't need this.
Have you played it?
I've played it once, yeah. Skimmed through. Yeah. then I left it sort of rather ostentatiously leaning against the record player, hoping it might provoke conversation with my wife, which, of course, it wouldn't, because she's massively uninterested in Pink Floyd, and in bootlegs generally, apart from her enormous collection of Dylan bootlegs, which I think numbers something like 76.
Good grief.
Can't be worth everything.
So, anyway, that's Tuesday night's gig, which was astonishing, wasn't it?
Very good, I thought.
Yeah, it was one of the best yet of the gigs that we've had.
It was terrific. It was absolutely
And I think Backwards Seven has actually written about it on the blog.
This is his version of it. Where are we? He says, he starts off talking about the DJ. he says, well, this is why you don't call upon boys to do a man's job. If you want this kind of set, you summon David Hepworth. Very nice of him, Dave, say these nice things about you. You played some Hank Williams at one point.
I did.
You also played a song by, I can't remember who, it might have been Mighty Sparrow, or something like Give Back My Wife's Nightie.
The Wife's Nightie. It's not Mighty Sparrow, is it?
Who is it?
It's Lord Kitchener, I think.
Kitchener!
I think it's Kitchener.
Kitchener, oh, that's a great track.
It's fantastic.
It was very, very good. And he says, he says, I'm going to buy the Portico Quartet's album on the strength of last night's performance, although home listening will take away some of the pleasure of watching them methodically piece together their abstract sonic collages. Duncan Bellamy sitting stage right from the audience's point of view, behind what may very loosely be described as a drum kit, extracting a weird, brittle sound from a cymbal. It wasn't a cymbal, was it? What was that?
No, he did have cymbals.
They were kind of like a sort of bent...
Oh, they were in the right. Well, those are like gamelan
extraordinary
instruments, aren't they? They're Balinese, I think.
It looked like he was going to lift up these hemispherical brass lids and reveal a barbecue chicken. fingers crossed. I was rather hoping, anyway.
It's extraordinary, really, because I'm in my DJ eerie above the stage.
Yeah.
And it's a small stage, and it's packed with equipment, isn't it, from both groups. It's astonishing. And they had to pick their way around it between, you know, one of the...
I was told I wasn't allowed on stage. That was fair enough. Yeah, I was trying to give you a beer or something, and Scritti Pilati's manager came up and said, you simply cannot enter this zone. You know, it's full of flashing diodes.
Because it's not as
huge quantities of electrical cable.
And it's not as if you've got big feet.
No. I don't just steam through this reputation. No, God, no.
Putting your feet in litter bins.
No, he says, what else does he say? There's a bit more about Portico Quartet. He says, Scritti Pilati, he says, I can't think of a band even remotely like Scritti Pilati. I've never heard anybody claim to be influenced by them. That's interesting, actually. Their own influences seem to be more literary than musical and are overshadowed by the idiosyncrasies of their chief songwriter, Green Gartside. It's very well written, this, isn't it?
It is.
Really well done. Who's soulful, vaguely...
You see, we have readers who can write better than most magazines.
Yeah, they really are as pure, as crystal clear as they were in the 80s. I was talking, that's very well put. There's somebody I was talking to, I think it might be Dr. Volume, actually. I think the great Volume had made a really good point.
The good doctor.
The good doctor. The rock and roll doctor.
Any aches and pains?
Yes, it's...
Now, are you a doctor now? Yes. And I never bother.
Right, well, two ComSat angels on the air every hour. You feel a whole lot better till symptoms subside. Now, I said to... The doctor made the point that... he said, if you'd gone to see any other group of that era... playing what Scritti Pilati played, which was effectively a greatest hit set with songs.
They played all their best known tunes.
To the point where they actually played the first song he ever wrote, Skank Block Bologna, which he wrote in 1977, which is wonderful to hear. And he said, if you went to see that experience with any other group, it would be essentially nostalgia. And he said he didn't feel it was. Now, I thought it was a really interesting point, because normally, if you'd seen... Obviously, we're talking about a slightly cheesier end of this. It was Gim Wilde or Howard Jones or something. It's going to be a bit cheesy. People accept that we're going back in time and revisiting a moment of our lives. But it didn't seem like that at all.
No,
it wasn't remotely nostalgic. I mean, they played the songs, obviously, on different instrumentation and with different lineup, but they sounded extraordinarily authentic, actually. I'm sure we'll come to that later, actually. It was very much the sound that they'd made at the time. But I felt the whole thing seemed to be kind of moving forward, and it seemed to be very, very contemporary. I didn't think for a moment about my life back in 1984.
I know what you mean.
A lot of people there who were of exactly the same age.
I know.
47, 48, 49, you know, that's the key age when Scritti Pilati singles would have really hit you. And I don't think any of them were sitting there thinking, God, I've got to get the old gang together.
OK, but
the old girls from school will go and see Experience Validity. It wasn't like that.
It come at this at a different angle. You know, what are the contemporaneous hit records of Scritability? You know, what else was happening at the time? I don't know, the Human League or... Yeah, would it be?
Yeah.
I think if you went and listened to the Human League records from that time, I don't think they'd sound as good as the Scritability records from that time. Because I think the Scritability records were sort of ahead of their time. Or kind of out of time.
I think that's possible. And caught up with them.
It's not like... You don't feel that your heart doesn't sink that, oh, we're going back to that sound or anything like that. You know, they're off in a bit of time of their own, you know, which is a great,
yeah.
It's a great strength if you can do it, you know. And very often the records that are like that are the records that are hardly produced at all. I've always got the theory that, you know, that's the reason Bob Dylan's great records still sound great nowadays. They don't sound produced because he wouldn't let anybody produce them.
That's true. Well, Scritability can be any more produced.
Absolutely.
But another thing that struck me was that it's very, very, very complicated music and thought processes. I mean, Green Gartside is a major intellectual. He has a very touching ability to stand outside of himself and send himself up, actually. He was doing that, wasn't he, the other night? Sort of, you know, it was very much where postmodernism meets pop reggae, yeah. It was, you know. Well, and he talked about all the, I don't know, Baudelaire or something at one point, the things that influenced them and the things they wrote songs about. So you've got, firstly, very complicated intellectual thought processes. You've then got an extremely complicated kind of Marxist political dimension in the early days. You've then got 6 or 7 different types of music. Black American soul music, reggae, obviously. You've got
hip-hop.
Hip-hop, massive hip-hop, just electro and kind of a strange flanging ambient noise. All of those things are, on paper, complicated and even more complicated when you throw them into the mix. And yet, the experience of watching that group on stage is not challenging at all. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just a beautiful
pop music.
Yes. Very easy experience. I think that's a great characteristic, actually, and quite rare. Because actually, in pop music, it's often the other way around. People have quite simple ideas, and they try and make them look more complicated than they actually are.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To kind of give it some edge and give it some character. And, you know, I thought it was extraordinary.
You have been listening to the free feed of the Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.